I'm Wei Chen. It's 17 minutes now before 8. It is a first for police service in Ontario, possibly the whole country. The Ontario Provincial Police will no longer provide the gender of people arrested, charged, or victims of crime. Take a listen to what Sergeant Carole Dion had to say. She's a spokesperson for the OPP.
It wasn't part of our Police Services Act mandate to release when we did media releases. It's not one of the criteria. Also for the freedom of information and for more recently, Human Rights Tribunal being more progressive in our approach. People sometimes may identify as female or a male, but may present themselves as a male or the opposite gender. So we're just steering clear of that and respecting everybody's choices and choosing not to release that information.
Sergeant Dion says instead of using gender pronouns to refer to people, officers will now just say the individual or the accused. For more, we've reached a human rights lawyer, Eli Labacki, is based in Ottawa. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
What did you make of this new policy?
Well, I'm a little bit concerned, quite frankly, because it's based on a poorly interpreted law, because that's not necessarily what the law says.
What does the law say?
So the law they're referring to stems from the Police Services Act, which is the enabling legislation governing policing services in the province of Ontario. And the law pertains to disclosure of personal information. The law says that the following information may be disclosed, and it enumerates a list of permissible characteristics, such as the individual's name, the date of birth, the address, the offense. But The law says that the information may be disclosed. It's what we call a suggestive or permissible regulation. It's not restrictive in the sense that it's not saying you may only disclose the following or you can only disclose the following. So you can disclose more information. And if this interpretation is incorrect and we follow their train of logic saying, well, gender is not part of the list, neither is race. Neither is religion, neither is culture or origin or where the person works, but those characteristics are still being released. So why gender and not the others? So it seems a little bit contradictory to me.
So is this a necessary change, do you believe? I mean, is this forward thinking or just not necessary?
I don't think, so the OPP stated that this is progressive. This is not progressive, it's repressive and regressive, if anything. It's not a necessary change in any way, shape, or form. The necessary change is having conversations with people that you're not sure of their gender. Ask the suspect, interact with the populations, non-binary or trans people, have identities and they have rights, and we cannot take away their identities by just, having this catch-all removal of gender altogether. That doesn't help anyone.
Interesting, because they're not even going to talk about it, so it gets hidden almost.
Well, it's controlling for liability, really. And in layperson terms, it's just they don't want to be sued in the future because there's so much going on right now.
We should point out, though, that when it comes to seeking a suspect in a case, though, that the police will say appears to be male or appears to be female.
Yes.
But in other cases, for victims or people who have been charged, and I got to ask you, what about clarity and fairness? Because my name, I know many people share my name. It happens to me every time I go to the airport or even the pharmacy to pick up medication. What if I'm wrongly impugned by someone's arrest?
Well, that's a very, very fair question. The onus rests on the police to conduct a fair investigation and to make sure that they have the right person. So they would cross-reference facts such as your date of birth or your address to make sure they have the right person. And quite frankly, they're usually very good at doing that.
Earlier, we heard from our columnist about cars. Paul Karchat was talking about how more women get injured in car collisions than men. And it made me think, what if they were victims of a drunk driver or somebody who was speeding or was a distracted driver, but we wouldn't know if they didn't say that?
Well, so statistics are still collected, and you can get them through an access to information request. How, However, I'm reluctant to support the disclosure of information of victims, well, sorry, survivors, because if you release their information, this can contribute to secondary victimization when they're seeking employment or anything to do with their families, or if there's any sort of someone was murdered or sexually assaulted and their name is published, then that could definitely add to the stigma and re-victimization of this person who's already survived a rather traumatic event. So we need to be considerate of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly from a human rights perspective.
Yeah. Sorry. And what about, sorry, I'm just thinking about all the different implications of this. What about relationship violence cases? Without identifying males as perpetrators, are there risks of minimizing the prevalence?
Well, it's important to identify suspects. The reason for that, and the law enables you to do that, because if there's a public risk, if there's a risk to public safety, and disclosure of this information can mitigate that public risk, that information ought to be released. And we saw this in the case of Jane Doe and the Toronto Police Service back in 1998, where there was then called the Balcony Rapist. This is a gentleman that was the police had not released information about, and what ended up happening was it contributed to more sexual assaults in the Toronto area because the police withheld information. And that's essentially what we're avoiding here.
But
we want to avoid increased victimization.
Right. I'm not talking about suspects, though. I'm talking about people charged with a relationship violence. If they no longer say it was a male who was charged, does that sort of minimize what's in our consciousness?
Any sort of characteristic that is withheld can impact. If you say a male, but you don't say their age, but you don't say their name. So it's we have to look at it holistically. We can't just say gender has to be released, but not race, but not where the person works, but not the person's name. We can't pick and choose. We have to have a very clear because there might be other victims, other survivors of this person. If this person has a gender-neutral name like Dominic or Morgan, it's important to know the gender to assist in identifying the suspect and or the person charged, to encourage people to come forward to confirm that that's the right person.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting. What do you think that they should have done instead?
With all due respect, I think that what they should have done is done their job better, investigate better, ask more questions. Binary, non-binary people and trans people are people. Just have a conversation with them. Ask them how they want to be identified, if they want to be identified as male or female or vice versa. And if you're not sure, it's okay not to disclose. And if you make a mistake in your disclosure, that's also okay. Park your ego and apologize. And if the mistake was made in good faith, then just be careful in the future and just make sure to validate the information. I mean, it's quite simple. You don't have to jump to litigation every time something happens. Or what's happening right now is really being overly risk averse, hyper vigilant, and they're just scared of litigation, which is really not necessary.
Eli, thank you so much for your perspective this morning.
My pleasure.
That's Eli Labaki. He's an Ottawa-based human rights lawyer.